A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Joe and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Astros spring training underway. The game's yet Joe Spott is the Astros manager. We heard from him earlier in the show talking about a meeting the team had to rally together for 2025. He also said they should be proud of the 2024 season. He had this to say about slugger Yordan Alvarez, who he thinks is going to have quite the 2025.
Guys, he had a really good year offensively. He told me the same thing, and I'm like, dude, you know, that's how good he is. He thinks that, you know, I think he can drive the ball more, he said, at times where he's, you know, there were some singles, doubles, not really slugging the way he's capable of. So he identifies some areas in his swing and in his mechanics that he can maintain that swing throughout the whole entire season. So when the big boy says that, you get excited.
I mean, I'm excited.
He thinks he can be even better than he was last year. Last year, he played in 147 games, the most games of his career, and finished the year with a 959 OPS. He hit 308. He had 35 homers. He also had 86 runs batted in.
Yeah, he should be like the... he's one of the best 10 players in baseball. Major League Baseball said that. They said he was the seventh best player in baseball this year. I'm hoping he's healthy. Healthy this year. They haven't given like a still an explanation of like really what was going on last year with his knees and everything, but him being the DH, it makes way more sense to him just to only be the DH.
And that's what they talked about at spring training. Alvarez said he's open to being exclusively the DH. So he and Jose Altuve are not pulling a Rafael Devers in Boston. I'm the third baseman. No, they're not doing that. Alvarez, I know in the past, had wanted to play in the outfield. I think he thought it gave him a little bit more rhythm. But now I think he's realizing, hey, I just came off of the season where I played in the most games and had my most at-bats. I want to continue doing this. It does seem, you know, talking about how it's strange someone can have 35 homers and 86 RBIs. That's so weird to me. He will, it seems, bat second again, and he wants to stay in the same spot in the lineup all year long. That's what he said through his interpreter yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, obviously when we've had Jeremy Booth on, we've talked a lot about the batting order. To me, it makes the most sense to have him bat second or fourth in the lineup. I'm fine if he's batting second. The only thing I think that hurts him personally is when he would be behind Bregman in the past, it felt like he would have maybe more success because Bregman was seeing a few more pitches. When Altuve goes up there and swings on the first pitch, Yordan Alvarez essentially becomes like your leadoff hitter at that point. So, I mean, if they're going to take a more disciplined approach, and that includes Jose Altuve, like maybe that'll work out for Alvarez as well. But I'm not a big batting order guy. Like I think batting third at this point to me, because you're more likely to have two guys be out, you know, in front of you. I get, like, that's why you'd want him batting second or fourth, but I think they can still win no matter where he's at.
Something you just said there, you hit the nail on the head. It's all about Altuve if Altuve starts buying into what the rest of the team is doing. And I know that's a lot to ask of a guy who is the best player in this franchise's history. But, okay, if a spot is doing this rally the troops meeting and he's saying, hey, we got to work on X, Y, and Z, and I'm sure fielding is one of those things, and better approach at the plate is another one of those things. Is that something Altuve would be willing to do? And I mean, considering Altuve is willing to play in the outfield, yeah, I think it is. Yeah. I think it is something he'd be willing to do, but it's also something that's just hard to imagine because he's never been that guy. And that is part of what makes him so special as a leadoff hitter. Obviously, yes, from time to time, it's going to be a one pitch at bat, but I would be scared bleepless of a guy like Altuve opening up a start, and like I'm throwing to him, and I know, oh, okay, I don't even really get one pitch to screw around with. If I make a mistake, he's going to hammer it into the Crawford box. That's the first pitch of the game.
Yeah, if I throw a fastball, I'm in trouble. I kind of feel like it's going to be a this is a rule for everyone besides Altuve. Honestly, I don't think they're going to change his approach at the plate. I think they're going to let Jose be Jose.
That's what I would do, is that I'd be like, hey, whatever's worked for you so far, like, just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Jose Altuve. Like, there's a little bit of old dog, new tricks with that, where it's like, we don't, maybe if there's guys on, you know, like the leadoff at bat, you can do the one pitch swing at the first pitch if you get a fastball thing. Maybe, you know, later in the game, maybe try to work the count a little bit more often than you do. But for the most part, I think you do just got to let Altuve do whatever he thinks will make him the best hitter, I trust.
Yeah, and same thing with Alvarez. Like whatever Alvarez wants to do at the plate, go for it.
Rest of the guys, they don't get to choose.
Yeah.
Or they get to choose, but you got to be patient first.
But like Yiner, yeah, Christian Walker, yeah, Paredes, Peña. Like, yeah, see some pitches this year.
Yeah.
And make the other team work a little bit. I mean, it felt like a lot of times last year there were games where the Astros starting pitcher through four innings would have 70, 80 pitches almost be done, and the opposing team would have like 35 through four innings. And you're just like, well, this guy doesn't have to work hard today. You're not challenging. You're not getting deep into bullpens because you're not pushing guys out of the games. And that's used to be what worked so well for the Astros. They just completely got away from it last year. So my guess is Altuve is going to be open to anything, like you said, Paul, but I wouldn't change his approach. So let him be Altuve.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. Will Jose Altuve be Jose Altuve this coming season? Can Yordan Alvarez be better than he was last year in 2025? 713-780-3776 to call in. To text in on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 97.5. Joe Espada talked about how he was trying to rally the troops for this season at a meeting that the Astros had at spring training. Did he rally the troops in the same way that this coach went viral for online doing? You'll hear audio of a man completely losing his mind, I guess, because he's about to be fired. Next, stay put.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the 409, someone texts in Altuve, best in franchise history. Nolan Ryan? Nolan Ryan wasn't an Astro for most of his career.
Yeah, Justin Verlander, better than Nolan Ryan. Jose Altuve, better than Justin Verlander.
I think in terms of just being the strikeout king, if you want to make your argument for Nolan Ryan based on that, you can. But just remember, you shared Nolan Ryan with the Angels, Mets, and Rangers. So that's why it's a little bit different. Nolan Ryan's one of the greatest pitchers ever, that's for sure. I mean, some of the numbers he has will never even be reached within 1,000.
Yeah, they'll never be sniffed.
I'm wondering who's going to be the next pitcher to have 3,500 strikeouts, let alone 5,000 like Nolan Ryan did. But I think ultimately, too, you just got to look at, like, Altuve has been with the Astros his whole career, and they won two World Series. Nolan Ryan, not the same thing.
Yeah, Altuve's the best. And he's going to get a statue in front of Minute Maid Park or Daikin Park at some point. I'll get it right one of these days. Once they fix,
I refuse to call it Daikin Park.
Well, they have to get it right first, because like if you go inside Minute Maid Park right now, it still says Minute Maid Park. There's still signage everywhere. They haven't changed all of it yet. So I'll get it right one of these days. But yeah, he's the best player in franchise history. Like, you look at historically where he's at, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He won two World Series. Everything he's accomplished, he's the best. And like in moments like this, like what we're talking about with the left field thing, it just adds to it.
And for context's sake, Ryan, who has 5,714 strikeouts over the course of his career, 5,714, which is insane. Just for context, though, with his time with the Astros, he led baseball in strikeouts just once with the Astros, 1987, and actually check that, 1987 and 1988. So he led it twice, and he did have two of his best seasons with the Astros, where he led the National League in ERA in 1981 and 1987. But I think if we're doing an Altuve versus Nolan Ryan argument, which guy won World Series, which guy didn't.
Which guy won an MVP and which guy didn't win a Cy Young?
so
that's still crazy to me.
It is nuts that Nolan Ryan never did win a Cy Young, but that's how it goes. That's the way the cookie crumbles, even though he nearly had 6,000 strikeouts. And hey, had the Astros in 86 beat the Mets and won the World Series, okay, maybe it's the more of a interesting conversation, but I think largely because you shared him with other teams, it's not the same as it is with Altuve.
Yeah. Go
ahead.
When I catch myself saying the greatest Astro in history with Altuve, the person I think about is Jeff Bagwell. That's the Jeff Bagwell has a case of maybe being a better hitter, just purely. It's a little bit easier to compare to just a hitter and a hitter to a hitter and a pitcher, but that's the one where I'm like, well. Bagwell's numbers are not going to – some of his numbers aren't going to get touched anytime soon by an Astro.
The 409 texter says, I respect the answer. The 832, Altuve is the greatest Astro, period. You can never change my mind. So there you go, guys.
I mean, Nolan Ryan, obviously, is a way better player than Jose Altuve, I would say.
Wait, what?
I think Nolan Ryan's a better player, as a career.
Oh, he had a better career.
Yeah, he had a better career.
Because I was confused. I was like, but he's a pitcher.
Yeah, he had a career than Jose Altuve, but as an Astro,
yeah,
it's Altuve.
That is crazy. They pitched 9 years for the Astros, and he pitched most of his career other places.
Yeah, it was about. I think he pitched longer for the Astros than with anyone else because it was 4 years with the Rangers and. I think it's 7 years with the Angels.
Yeah, it's more Angels than you think.
And the Mets is weird because the Mets didn't know how to use it.
Yeah, it was also in the 60s.
Effing losers.
Crazy.
Justin, I think they actually won with him. That's, I think, when the Mets had their incredible year. I think Nolan Ryan was there for that, ironically.
Justin Verlander is the closest active pitcher in strikeouts to him, and he's still 2,300 away.
Jesus. Okay. He'll get there. Just 10 more years.
Joe Espada gave a rally the troops speech to the Astros to open up spring training. Did you guys see, though, another speech that was put together by a coach who seems to be on the ropes? In fact, I'd never even heard of him until today when I saw this rant. This is Notre Dame basketball coach Micah Shrewsbury.
Don't give up on these kids, man. I don't care about anybody's opinion. I know who I am. I know I can coach basketball, and I know I'm turning this program around. So you gave up on me already? I'm going to see you back here. I don't give a damn. Don't give up on these kids, because we're going to get this thing rolling. I sat there and watched more Louisville fans in here than Notre Dame people, and that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing for me, because I'm the head coach here. And yes, I got us in this predicament. But don't come back when we're losing or when we're winning. We're turning this around, man. You better believe that. Everybody that gave up on me, believe it. Write this date down and believe it. Because we're going to get this thing rolling. Care if you gave up on me or not.
He seemed pretty calm until that moment where he just knocks the microphone off of the desk. I think he was mad because...
He screwed up?
He said, yeah. Well, we keep losing. We keep winning.
Yeah, that I think that's where it all kind of – that's where the wheels fell off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he also, hasn't been good.
That, too. Because he's only been there for, 2 years, right?
Yeah, he got hired in 2023.
Truly had never heard of him before.
I only know him because he was the Penn State head coach when Penn State played Texas in the tournament. And that was – it feels very recent. It might have been 3 years ago now. But that's all I know him from. Once he took the Notre Dame job, he just kind of disappeared out of my life. And, yeah, nice to have him back.
If you're a Notre Dame player, how do you respond to that? Are you embarrassed by that?
Yes.
Or do you feel like this guy's got your back? Because this could backfire even more than this season already has for him.
If I'm a player, I'm already looking at the portal.
Yeah.
He did have the players back there. 100%.
If I'm a player, there's nothing wrong with that. That speech specifically, or that rant specifically, doesn't change my mind. I think just before he sat down, I was already...
You're already out.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you...
There was a moment in that, and it was before he butchered it, where I thought to myself, all right, I'd like to play for this guy. And
yeah, because it's kind of Mike Gundy-ish.
Yeah, but they're 11-14. I'm out. Sorry. Yeah. I can transfer somewhere else.
knocking the microphone off the table didn't feel authentic. It felt a little performative.
That's I think whenever you see a coach do something like that, it always feels performative.
It reminds me of the Brian Kelly from week one this year where he slaps the table.
Yes.
It's the same thing every time or whatever he said.
Yeah. And he said the same thing at the end. It's on me.
It's on me.
Well, recruit better.
It's Bill O'Brien favorite, probably. Too. It's on me.
It is the ACC after all.
Notre Dame basketball is very interesting to me.
They've always been irrelevant.
Feels like they should be better.
Yes, but like they have very similar to like they're a football school,
but they're in Indiana, which is a basketball state.
But it's not anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean
Indiana
ask
sucks.
IU. Yeah,
like, Indiana sucks. Notre Dame sucks. Like
Purdue.
Purdue's
really good.
But they're really the only one of like.
But it is a basketball state, and they've honestly never really been more than what like a top 15 program. Because I remember when they were in the Big East, you always paid attention to Syracuse Notre Dame games. Speaking from my perspective, but you were never like, oh, here comes Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, like they never like captured me as like a fan. Like I don't root for Notre Dame basketball. Like I don't. I have no interest. I have no allegiance to it. Like there's just nothing about it because
Mike Bray didn't get you going.
Didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I thought he was still there, not even kidding, until literally this morning, and I saw this guy rant. Like Micah Shrewsbury.
Name too.
I think the name's tough.
I think it would be better if it was Michael Shrewsbury, but Micah Shrewsbury, it's a little.
He doesn't look like a Micah Shrewsbury.
Mike Bray coaches in the NBA?
Hell yeah.
He coaches for the Hawks apparently.
As what?
Assistant coach.
Oh, wow.
Mike Bray looks like he could be the Penguin. Yes. He just looks a little bit like Colin Farrell as the Penguin.
Yeah.
I've always thought that.
Yeah, Colin Farrell before he got fat.
Yeah.
As the Penguin.
He wore a lot of the open collar shirts. Back when coaches wore suits. Kids, let me tell you about back when coaches wore suits.
They did.
5 years ago.
And they would sweat through them.
Yeah.
So funny.
He was always the guy who wore the suit, but it was always unbuttoned. Like the top couple buttons were unbuttoned.
I can't believe it took a pandemic to get the coaches out of suits. It's such a hilarious thing.
I liked it.
I love
Rick Pitino suits. I mean, the man has, like most Italian guys, I'm not discriminating here. I'm just saying, like, the man can peacock. The all-white suit was awesome.
I kind of think for, like, the playoffs, you should wear suits.
I do, too.
The coaches should have to wear suits.
No, I like it. I like wearing a suit out there. But bring that back to football.
Oh, like,
these guys
like
are wearing, Mike Nolan? Like, they're, like, wearing dry fit athletic shirts.
Are you see, like, D'Amico in a suit?
Yeah. GQ D'Amico out there?
Al Golden's like, hell no. I quit this act 10 years ago.
Tom Landry did it. It was cool.
He did do it.
Bear Bryant had the hat, but he wasn't wearing a suit.
Yeah.
By the way, we have another freak baseball injury. Another freak baseball injury. This is from Dustin May. I had no idea that this is a reason that Dustin May, who looks basically like Juggalo Trey, our old friend.
Yes, picture tall, athletic Juggalo Trey.
Yeah. He apparently was a week away from starting a rehab stint in the minors last June. He went out to eat and ordered a salad. A piece of lettuce got stuck in his throat. He took a drink of water to wash it down. It didn't work. He had a tear of his esophagus from this piece of lettuce. Doctors performed a CT scan revealing the severity of his tear. He went into surgery immediately. In a matter of hours, he went from on the verge of a long-awaited comeback to a setback again because a piece of iceberg lettuce got stuck in his throat.
I got a couple questions. How does that happen? It's just lettuce.
Iceberg lettuce, there is that spot. What is it? The stalk of a piece of iceberg lettuce? It had to have been there. And this is truly freak accident.
Yes. Question two. Why does an injury to your esophagus stop you from coming back to throw a baseball?
You probably can't eat for a while.
Yeah. Can't eat. That's like breaking a jaw.
I guess that's true.
To repair the rupture, May had a full abdominal surgery.
Oh, okay.
He had a long vertical scar from his lower chest to his stomach. Yeah, because you gotta get to the esophagus.
Okay, that makes sense.
You gotta cut the guy open. You might even have to break his ribs, honestly.
That makes sense. Think about it.
But shouldn't it just be like right? I'm pointing at my neck. just like right here.
That's what I was thinking of. Like, well, like if they just like work
tracheotomy
like in the throat area.
Yeah.
But yeah, where are you gonna go in without cutting like the you know like
gas?
That is nuts.
I do remember hearing the phrase torn esophagus.
Ow.
And we assume, I think maybe we talked about, maybe a different show, we thought it was maybe steak. That's like the only food that we could see injuring yourself while eating
or like
in this way.
Or like someone like breaks a glass and ends up in your food on accident. Like, because that does happen to people. Like,
it sounds like yeah, you're speaking from personal
kitchen
experience.
Kitchen nightmares.
No, right, I've heard of experiences.
Okay, gotcha. I mean, as someone who gets steak caught in my throat on the regular, I'm not ashamed to admit it.
You just don't.
I've had like 4 or 5 Heimlich maneuvers for eating steak.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Cut smaller pieces, dude.
No.
He needs, Joe, he needs you to come over and cut the pieces. Like,
yeah, just like
we'll go to a steak
Joe
restaurant.
Jr.
I'll just be like, all right, guys. Paul, here you go. JJ, you're up. You're next, buddy.
So there you go. Yeah, he finally spoke about it today. And
I'm glad he can speak.
I guess he couldn't talk. It was extremely frustrating. You can't plan for it. You can't try to prevent it. It just happened. It wasn't on my bingo card for 2024.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dustin.
Wouldn't be on my bingo card either. Nearly choking
on lettuce too. That's
what a bad way to go out. That's why you don't eat salads.
Even if you say he tore his esophagus eating lettuce or eating a salad, lettuce would be one of the last parts of the salad that you would assume. You'd be like, oh, maybe a crouton got in there. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to look at food ever again.
I just give him credit for not lying. Like, he could have lied.
How do you lie about torn esophagus?
Steak.
Oh. Okay.
Not salad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like, I thought you meant not eating food.
No, you got to be honest. You can't make that up.
I mean, you know, Madison Bumgarner lied to us for like 3 months about his injury before he finally admitted that he crashed his dirt bike a couple years ago.
That's true.
So,
and he also did rodeos under a fake name.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa still claims he threw his back out sneezing.
There's some fantastic, weird-ass baseball injuries that have happened over the course of time. Didn't one guy walk through a shower door or something?
Yeah. Baseball seems to have all of them. Like, it's like you don't, I feel like you don't hear football players. Well, we did have Antonio Brown when he froze his feet, but he got cut right after that. Like, all of, like, the weird injuries seem to happen in baseball.
Yeah, the only one I remember not baseball-related. Oh, well, there's Dustin Johnson before the Masters falling downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe under the influence.
What was the golfer?
We don't know.
The golfer recently, he cut his hands.
Oh,
making
yeah.
Meatballs.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler, right?
Was it Scheffler? I thought it was someone else. But yeah, there's another golfer that hurt his hands and was like out for a while. Carlos Boozer, didn't he get hurt like picking up a duffel bag?
Is
what he said.
Yeah.
Or a gym bag.
We can't forget Lance McCullers here to localize it. Hurt his elbow.
Oh, champagne bottle.
Champagne cork, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he like banged his hand on the bottle.
I mean, that would make a lot more sense.
Banged his elbow.
It said he was hit in the elbow by a champagne bottle.
Okay. Now, for some reason, I thought it was like the cork.
Like
hit him,
the
just
cork.
Like, oh, 1,000 PSI just blasts into his elbow.
He takes his hand off his elbow, just covered in blood.
What if it was the other way? What if he was popping the champagne, like as he popped it, he hurt his elbow? Carlos Correa, of course.
Oh, yeah. Massage. Whoa.
Hey, I'm still not sure what happened. I still don't believe
respect.
It.
I'm going to respect what goes on between Carlos and Daniela in their home.
Of Houston massage area or Houston area massage stories.
I respect this privacy.
This one's a good one.
Yeah.
This one's a good one.
It's Kalan and Georgie's Joe. I'm Paul. Sean behind the glass, 713-780-3776 to call in and text. And you can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join us on Twitch at ESPN 975. You wanted to weigh in on weird-ass injuries, you can. Up next in the 10-minute drill, the future of one of the most important Texans ever is in doubt. You'll find out why next.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Sack!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. We had a couple of other injury nominations. Trevor Bauer with his groin. And Astro hurt his neck toweling off a few years back. We got to have to look that one up. Scotty Scheffler with the wine glass broken while making ravioli.
That's what it was.
Just a little bit ago. Also, someone texted in from the 409. This is about me admitting to choking on meat several times. From the 409, breaking. Paul is not the throat coat as we all thought. There's another one. Where did it go? Oh, boy. That was a funny text. Anyway, guys, it is Gallant and Georgie's Joe and Paul, Sean behind the glass.
Also, I said the Steve Sparks one that I've heard him tell before, where apparently when he was a rookie, he tried to rip a phone book in half. And he dislocated his shoulder. Not great.
That's possible?
Apparently.
I guess if you, like, are just pulling hard enough and, like, your hand slips or something.
Yeah, like ripping it?
I don't know. I don't know. Do we ever find out how Kaz Matsui got his injury? How he got the fissures?
Ooh, no, we didn't. No. Okay. I don't think we want to know that.
That's a bridge too far. Seems like it would be an interesting story. I don't know.
We got some possibly major news with the Houston Texans. Because the longest tenured player in Houston Texans history is a free agent. John Weeks, who has been here for 15 years. Also, the Texans signed long snapper Tucker Addington to a futures contract. I have no idea what that means, but is John Weeks' stranglehold on the Texans' long snapping position in doubt? I don't know, Jim.
I hope not. I mean, what are you going to do without your long... I mean, I thought he was going to be a Ring of Honor guy. He was like Jose Altuve, be a Texan for life. Never see him play for another team.
I do feel like, weirdly, John Weeks at least has a 1% chance of getting into the Texans Ring of Honor. Now, he won't get in, but he is the longest tenured player ever.
It'll be so funny if the second player, the third player they put in, Andre, JJ, John Weeks.
Who do you think will be the next Texans player to play 15 years? Do they even exist for the Texans? Like an entire career,
man.
15 years for the Texans. I doubt it ever happens.
Yeah, Stroud is like the only guy, just because quarterbacks are the only guys that stay on one team forever, and they do it less now than ever before.
I mean, like Will Anderson, like could be a Texan his whole career, so could Stingley, but like they're not getting to 36.
Yeah,
so like for someone to play that long, it'd have to be CJ.
Woof. And we'll see if he plays his entire career in Houston. CJ did say at the Travis Scott softball invitational that he wants to be in Houston for 100 years.
I mean, that's...
I'd want to be dead personally at the age of 123 or whatever CJ would be at that moment in time, but hey.
What did you say, like 71? That's what you're looking for?
I mean, I think I'm going to be gone by 70.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like at some point, the drinking will catch up.
Is that literally like double your age right now?
It's a little more than double.
I mean, honestly,
okay.
But in April, it'll be a little less than
okay.
A little more than half my age.
You're at like 49% of the way through right now.
I don't know if drinking's the concern here, Paul. I think just eating steak is what might get you.
Yeah, there's.
I can't eat it by myself anymore.
Yeah, like,
I got
chaperone.
Some steak ready for tonight. Do you want me to record myself, live stream myself eating? It could be a
if
snuff
you could,
film.
Yeah. Do it on stream.
Yeah.
Just so we know.
So, new Gallant Says podcast. Can Paul eat this steak?
Does it get worse when you drink? It's like, can you drink and steak at the same time?
It's been a while since this has happened.
Okay. Well,
by the way, it's been a while.
It's been a couple months.
It's been 7 years. But
okay.
But it used to happen a lot. Like when I was a kid, specifically. Like I would eat it a little bit too quickly, and I would have big chunks. Just put them in my mouth, get stuck in my throat, you know? And yes, the texture says not. Clearly not a big throat for Paulie. The Jaguars, we talked about this a little bit earlier. They never were called by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Doesn't say that the Jaguars never called anybody about potentially shopping Trevor Lawrence, though, because, of course, that was a rumor last week.
I think Trevor Lawrence will be the Jags quarterback for the foreseeable future, a.k.a. until his dead money is up and they can move on from him.
I don't know, though, because I think they're in the same spot that they, to a lesser degree, the Cowboys are with Dak Prescott in that. Like, can you really do better than Trevor Lawrence? Do you expect to do better than Trevor Lawrence? Like, Lawrence is above average.
That's true.
I feel like, and his skills sucker a lot of people into thinking, oh, I can make this work.
Yeah, I just...
That's what Liam Cohen's clearly thinking, taking this job.
I mean, yeah, he's under contract through 2030, that's going to be super... God, it seems almost impossible to get out of it at that point. But his dead cap would be starting in 2029, so he's probably there the next four seasons. You would think of this as a brand new contract, so it would make sense for him to be there the entire time. The only difference, though, is don't you feel like with Trevor Lawrence on the roster, they could still bottom out at some point and be in position to draft a quarterback? Where, like, Dallas with Dak, it feels like they're still going to be too in the middle of the first round to take a big swing at a draft pick.
I mean, they kind of did last year.
We're still picking 12.
I know. That's the biggest shame for the Jaguars, because last year was a disaster for them.
Yeah.
What was their record? 5-12?
Oh, no, the Cowboys are picking 12th. I think the Jags are picking in the top, somewhere in the top 10. But
Jaguars were 4-13 last year. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're picking top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
would be pretty funny if they drafted a quarterback.
Shedeur Sanders.
Oh my gosh.
Shedeur Sanders doesn't seem to care where he's drafted, but this is the news that we got for the NFL draft as we get closer and closer to Mock Talk 2025. Cam Ward, he has a message for all the teams that are thinking about maybe not drafting him. If you don't draft me, that's your fault. You've got to remember that you're the same team that's going to play me for the rest of my career, and I'll remember that. So a lot of quarterbacks feel that way, but he's actually putting it on record.
Well, good luck, Cam.
Gotta say, if you ever lose a game to literally any team, people are going to use this against you.
Daniel Jeremiah had a mock draft come out yesterday. No, today, this morning. And Cam Ward is the second pick in the draft. Normally when guys do this, A, it's after the draft. B, they're like at least like the 10th pick.
Like they fall in a little bit.
Like every team that passes on Cam Ward is going to feel the wrath for the rest of his career. It's one team.
Like this is a good narrative for like Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for Cam Ward.
Even like Bo Nix, who's like the 12th pick, and there's what? Five other quarterbacks picked ahead of him. Like, that makes more sense than the, you know, Daniel Jeremiah's mock. The Titans go with Abdul Carter, and then you're the second pick. It's like, they didn't even pick a quarterback above you. It's just, I'm going to say this is a premature chip on your shoulder.
Okay.
He's getting pre-mad. It's like when you work yourself up, when you think you're going to get into an argument with someone, and then they're like, actually, it's no big deal, and you're like, I'm already kind of ready to be mad, so this is a problem. I think that's what Cam Ward's setting himself up.
Okay. Classic young man.
Yeah, he might just go number one. He might just be the Titans quarterback.
That is the move for Tennessee, probably.
I think I'm waiting.
For when?
If you're
in this spot, you have to take a swing. What if the Texans hadn't taken a swing? Like, you know, everyone was saying Bryce Young's the guy that they wanted, and it does feel like ownership pressured them to take C.J. Stroud ultimately, just reading some of those stories, but you have to take a swing if you're in this spot. I don't think you have a choice.
I'm not a big into this quarterback class. Like, typically I would agree with you, but like I don't like this group.
So
that's fair.
If I'm the Browns, I don't want a quarterback because it feels like they have to just ride out this Deshaun Watson contract for at least another year of just having the money. Actually, the money's going to be on your books for like 3 years after you cut him, no matter what. But that you don't even get the like benefit of, well, we have a cheap quarterback so we can build around him. Well, if you cut Deshaun Watson or if he's on your team, you're still paying top dollar money for a quarterback. It's just Deshaun Watson is the quarterback. So if I'm the Browns, that's the only team that I would distinctly say like I would not draft a quarterback if I'm them out of the top three.
I mean, because if you're the Titans, you take Cam Ward or Sanders and you hit on him, you could easily be the best team in the division in 2 years. Like, you could pass the Texans. It's logical.
Yeah, it's not crazy.
Yeah,
it's
they're not
crazy.
Leaps and downs ahead of everyone, even with all the talent that they have. No, that's a fair point. More quarterback news. The Vikings probably will not give Sam Darnold the franchise tag, so he might be a free agent. And Aaron Rodgers still wants to play, so he will be a free agent, at least based off of the way that the Jets are talking about his future. They said, we're done, bro.
Will anyone want him, you think?
Rodgers?
Yeah.
Someone will talk themselves into it.
Like Stafford, Wilson, like Russell Wilson, you know, Justin Fields, Sam Darnold. Like, there's so much drama around Aaron Rodgers. And that whole experience, I just don't know. Like,
Raiders.
Yeah, that would make sense. Pete Carroll.
Brady's there. I think Brady probably would like to see a good quarterback there. I mean, what's the harm, you know?
If you're that team, what's the harm?
If he's a free agent, what's the harm?
Pittsburgh would make some sense if they were open to it.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh. That's probably the one, if I'm Rodgers, that I kind of want
to go to.
And, like, who would bring in Davante Adams that needs a wide receiver? Pittsburgh. Because it feels like they're married.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. So there you go. That's the 10-minute drill. Let's just go straight on through. Is there such a thing as too much sports? Is there such a thing as too many? I ask that because in both the NCAA tournament and in the college football playoff, we are seeing proposals for expansion. This is from Pete Thamel of Sports Illustrated. And has he moved to ESPN now? I guess he's at ESPN.
He is at ESPN, yeah.
If the NCAA tournament expands, which is an if, it would likely expand to 76 teams. Per multiple high-ranking sources. Meanwhile, the SEC and Big Ten are working on a new college football playoff format that would include expansion and four automatic bids from each league, the SEC and Big Ten. Since those two conferences clearly have the biggest schmenzers, for lack of a better term. They can flex a little bit. They can swing it around. And I guess when this college football playoff that starts with ESPN, 2026 through 2031, they're going to have the majority of major decisions at their disposal. It would be a 14-team format. With a 4-4-2-2-1-1 model, the two top seeds would get first-round buys. There would be no buys in a 16-team structure, so they are going with 14 here. I guess the question to ask is it really bad to push back on a bigger NCAA tournament when we all love March Madness more than we like college basketball's regular season? And same for the college football playoff, which certainly had some duds and definitely ruins the meaning of every single game to a degree during the regular season. Is it worth it for both of these proposals?
I mean, for March Madness, I get it in terms of you're now turning the first 2 days, the Tuesday and Wednesday, or Monday and Tuesday, whatever it is. You've now expanded that by another four basketball games if you add eight teams. So you're just adding to that. So that makes it a little more exciting. It's just like that is like a little bit more of like there's constant basketball action happening on those 2 days, but they're all like nothing burgers. I mean, if you look at like Joe Lunardi, he puts the first four out and the next four out. So now all those teams would be in. So, and you're talking about VCU, Georgia, SMU, North Carolina, Indiana. Like they're like, okay, fine. Like it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't make me excited about the NCAA tournament. So for me, I don't care. I'm fine either way. I'll take it or leave it. For football, this is inevitable. I'd rather them just go to 16 if they're going to do this. I'd rather just go right to 16. All teams have a home game. The SEC gets four teams. The Big Ten gets four teams. And then you just take the next best eight teams that are left after that. I think that would make way more sense. I do think because you're going to force the SEC and the Big Ten to have four teams each, the SEC is going to expand. their conference schedule. And if you're basically saying the regular season doesn't really matter of your non-conference games, because if you do this, if you're the SEC and the Big Ten. So in theory, you could get like a real partnership here where Alabama could play Ohio State and it doesn't affect them. It doesn't affect their college football playoffs. So that could be a positive if they actually go that way.
It would help with money. And ultimately, if this is getting floated for both of these things, you're going to make more money with both. So this is definitely going to happen with both. We'll see a bigger NCAA tournament, which I know some people will push back on. But honestly, you shouldn't on this one. I think it is kind of lame to have more than 64 teams. But at the same time, oh, another weekend of college basketball games and it's more than just two or like the playing games that they play, you know?
Yeah.
Like what? You really would hate that? I don't know. I'd kind of enjoy it.
That's the thing. It's just like adding playing games, which I don't think is like the worst thing.
No, it's fine.
It's just like you said, have that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday instead of being two games each night. Now there's however many it would be.
Yeah,
it'd
be a couple. You could, and you could have your
have it on during the day.
Right. Like, I mean, the best part of the tournament, in my opinion, it's the first weekend where you just have games stacked, and then it's like ending of a game, ending of a game, yeah. Ending of a
staggered
game,
out.
Ending of a game. Yeah. It's awesome.
I will say, though, if they do this, they need to stop having the 16 seeds as play-in. Like the play-in game, there's always one or two play-in games that are the 16 seeds. So it's basically the two worst teams that got an automatic that won their conference tournament and got an automatic bid. Get that out of here. I just want to see the bubble teams play.
Yeah, like it should be like for this year, like North Carolina. Like it should be North Carolina should be trying to get in versus Vanderbilt, who's projected to be 11 seed right now. Like that's fine, but like don't be making Bryant and Cleveland State and these low level conferences. Like, don't make them play in the play-in tournament. Give them their bid. They automatically qualify. Let them play in the real tournament. If you're going to expand, you should make it harder for the conference teams to get in because they're facing the same thing that
I'm with you.
Football is 31 of the 68 teams this year are coming from the SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12.
I had it the way you were saying it backwards for a second. I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That should be like automatically in. The big conferences. Syracuse has been the biggest beneficiary of this. Syracuse has gotten into the tournament multiple times and has made Final Fours in years where I didn't think they deserved to make it. And this year they're not going to. I'm with you. It should be more of the smaller teams. But, of course, the tournament wants to have the big programs that everyone watches in them. As far as the college football side of it with this expansion, I'm never going to like the idea that two conferences get four automatic bids. And especially the Big Ten, which, sorry, we all saw last year, like Indiana – get out.
Yeah, they would have been an automatic. Like, we wouldn't even been able to argue Indiana
right in
the tournament.
Like, Indiana, the Big Ten has generally three teams that you look at and you're like, yeah, three. That's generally it. And I know that this past year you had Ohio State who won it all. You had Penn State. And you had Indiana. And in other years, you'll have Michigan, and in other years, you'll have Wisconsin. But are you going to have four teams like that every year out of the Big Ten? I don't buy it.
It seems like they're just banking on, like, every year, Ohio State's going to be in now every year because they'll finish top four in the Big Ten every year.
Yep, every single time.
But, like, they were a game away from finishing fifth. Illinois only finished a game behind them in conference play. So, like, yes, Ohio State would still make it in as the fifth team out of the Big Ten.
They would bend over backwards to get it.
But, like, so they'll make it still. But, like, you're saying, like, Illinois could have, like, been easily a team that qualified if Ohio State had one slip-up, one more slip-up in the conference?
That would happen now.
That happens. But, like, I also wonder, like, what's the next step of this? Like, if you're already going to four guaranteed teams, when are we getting the Big 12 ACC merger? Because that just, to me, feels like the only way for them to combat this is to either blow up those conferences and it really just becomes an AFC and NFC with the SEC and the Big Ten, or they try to form their own super conference in a way.
I mean, if I'm the Big 12 and less so the ACC, but especially if I'm the Big 12 and they're like, wait, I'm getting two automatic qualifiers every year. Like right now, they're only unless something drastic changes or happens where they have two teams that go undefeated and then play in the title game and then one team wins, one team loses, I have a very hard time seeing two teams make the CFP out of the Big 12 in any given year. I feel like every year it's going to be the Big 12 championship game is like the decider of who makes the playoff and who doesn't.
Is college playoff expansion in basketball or football good? You can weigh in on that if you want. 713-780-3776 to call to text on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. Also, the Astros are at spring training, and we heard some very interesting things from Joe Espada in the last 24 hours. You'll hear them next. Stay put.